Love Osho podcast brings you the real stories of the people whose lives have been inspired and transformed by Osho. We explore why thousands of people are falling in love with Osho and where to find them. Take a deep breath and enjoy the show.
Hello and welcome to the Love Osho podcast. My name is Swaram and I'm the host. Today our guest is Michael Graeber. Michael holds an MFA from the University of Memphis and is co-founder and managing partner at Southern Growth Studio. Michael has more than 20 years of experience leading marketing and innovation efforts and has advised a myriad of clients on branding strategy. Michael is also a published poet, musician, and a shamanic practitioner who leads ceremonies with or without plant medicine. Hey, Michael. Hi. Welcome to the Love Osho podcast. How are you?
I am so well. It's such an honor to be here with you. Thank you. Thanks so much.
My honor, my privilege. So, Michael, I'm really looking forward to discussing with you how coming into contact with Osho and doing these meditations changed your life. And also, I'd love to hear about your experience in working in the business world as a business consultant, venture capitalist, whilst being very much spiritually oriented, especially connected with Osho. So, and how you keep these two worlds together, being an artist, a shaman, a meditator, and very much being in the corporate world. So I can't wait to dive in, but I'd love to start by knowing how initially you came to know about Osho.
Thank you. And, you know, having awareness of Osho has really unlocked so much of my reason for being and has been this deep well for inspiration. So I was going through a crisis in life, having always been a seeker. I had three children, two of whom had cystic fibrosis and were very ill most of their childhood. And that went to a point where a marriage of 19 years just imploded. I was about 35 years old. I had gone through all of these life dramas, Sturm und Drang. You know, I quit drinking after my father died of alcoholism. I was raising these sick kids whose biology was fighting one another, meaning my wife and I were just at odds, and everything started shifting. I started becoming more of an active seeker. I was always a musician and a poet on the side. And I ended up taking one of my children and going to a geodesic dome. And it's a church that's a geodesic dome in Hot Springs, Arkansas. And there's a cantadoras named Star Fuentes there. It's a very strange place. Star is an amazing teacher and her husband Art is an anthropologist and a shamanic practitioner. And then they have a John Denver impressionist as their musician. But it was a weekend in time travel. And we sat down and we started doing this exercise. It was a Sufi gazing exercise and everyone had partnered up. And all of a sudden, this woman who was there from Munich, Germany, grabbed my shoulder, turned around and placed immediately in front of me. And I knew that there was this weird hand of fate going on. We stared into each other's eyes and started trying to get into past and future lives at the same time and see the other person. And it was as if a jolt of lightning hit me, right? And so I wrote a poem about the experience and it was published on Osho News. It's brief. I'd like to read that and then I'll unpack it a little bit.
Go ahead. Absolutely.
So the poem is called "This is the Test." Only death, amnesia, or love melts the last frozen veils between us and the beloved. The few saints whose skin turns golden, taste such lips in two worlds. Here you are, awake in the senseless river of eternity and alive in your sweaty skin. We broke time's membrane. Why did you kill me in wartime after I bathed you with my best batch of lavender soap when Black Death ravished you only a few centuries before? Who was married so young before records were kept? Us? I only recall laughter, the sun on your white cloak, ivy in your hair, spring turning the mountains green. You say that I taught for centuries. I know. I wanted to learn how, to handle this glance. This is the test. The grading scale depends upon subject and object merging when called to dance and the fiddle plays. So we sat there gazing at each other, and all of a sudden I saw that I was married to her in one incarnation, and she was killing me and a soldier in war one in another, and she saw me as a priest in ancient Egypt and then sort of a best friend of Jesus hanging, all these wonderful things that we couldn't deny. And I wrote that poem and I sent it to her, and she sent me back one sentence, and it was from Osho, right? And that was my introduction to Osho.
It was from Osho. Did you know at the time it was from Osho?
So I emailed her the poem, and she emailed back, and it was that silence is the language of love, you know, from Osho. And I was like, so all of a sudden, this inner knowing in me opened up. Later that day, I took my children to the Goodwill, you know, a secondhand store. And it still got the marking here. I bought the copy of the autobiography of a spiritually incorrect mystic and opened it up, and something just shot through me, right? Keep in mind, at this point, I was raised Jewish and then was a confirmed Episcopalian and was teaching about the saints and mystics in adult Sunday schools and Martin Luther King Jr. and others. And I'd taken hand in a Sufi order, right? And in this Sufi order, we would go to these zikrs and these 3-day retreats. And the wife of my sheikh was a scientist. But after the 3rd day of a zikr, a 3-day retreat, she would say, well, I just came back from the grocery store and I picked up an apple and I saw all the particles dancing around the apple. And I was reminded, this is why I come to these retreats, to remind it of our ecstatic existence, right? And then my sheikh told a story there when his sheikh, Pir Vilayat Khan, was in Nashville and was doing a zikr. And he said all of a sudden, this was in the early 80s, all these orange people started coming. And he's like, I'm not ready for these orange people. They're a little bit too woolly, too radical, too intense, even for the crazy Sufi. So I started thinking, who are these orange people? You know, this was all happening at the same time, this great confluence of things. And at the same time, there were all these different rivers running into the ocean, so to speak. I had lunch with a professor named Mark Musa, and Mark Musa has a lot of the religion series and the great courses, one on Buddhism, one on Islam, one on Sufism, one on Christianity. The Axial Age is one of them. But he said this framework that has stuck with me all these years. And that framework was, you always have theists, people who believe in God. And then you have people that argue with them, the atheist. And they're always in this great debate. But then there's a third camp, and they don't care about that argument. They're all about the experience. And these are the mystics. And that's what you are. And, you know, at the same time, I was reading the autobiography of a spiritually incorrect mystic, and just started thinking about Osho and what a profound revelation it was to go deeper with Osho and begin to understand. The way that I see him after taking in his words is that he is the great poet of existence. Every moment was an enlightened, heightened experience. And his model and his unplugging us from all the mental models of culture was a great reminder of the poetics of existence, of our ecstatic state that's beyond trauma, right? Of just sheer, I'll call it joyous, blissful serenity in that ocean of energy, and in like the way that he signed his name, right? So I kept reading, and then I found this great book, which was on basic human rights. And I think it is a crime for every ethics and philosophy department not to teach this. I have a son who just graduated from Tulane with a philosophy and economics degree and spent a year at the London School of Economics. And he said, this little book packed in much more depth, weight, and gravity than everything he read in all his years in that school, right? It changed his life because no one's talking about the freedom of the individual. So I've done many readings. When I was traveling doing my corporate work, I would take around Roots and Wings and others, and you know, loved all the literature, all the videos, all the biographies I could get my hands on. But I wasn't able to properly, I guess, be initiated into sannyas. And that bothered me for a long time. But then I realized it really didn't matter to Osho, is my interpretation. And just in a lot of the writings, I would like my sannyas to live life in totality, you know, which tantra, the awe, the embrace of everything that it is. How beautiful. A sannyasin need not be an official one. Any seeker, anyone in search of the truth is a sannyasin. And so suddenly, and then later when he talks so much about how he didn't want a religion turned out of this, but just a mode of existence that is inherently, in my language, poetic, right? It is a deeper state of consciousness that we're plugging into through the meditation. And then there's another reason I'll say that. And there's a great quote of Freud, which said, every time I make a discovery, I see that a poet has already been there, right? And Osho taps into that essence of things, whether it's about individual liberties and freedom, turning societal and cultural conventions on their head, making us reframe things from a way that really matters to our individual imprint in life. It's so liberating that he was denied access to 21 countries, right, when he was in exile. It's I cannot think of someone who was so threatening to a power structure just because they believed in the autonomy and authority of the individual and their right to make all these decisions. And to me, you have to trust with great conviction of what William Blake called the original genius of humanity, which is our, we'll call it sacredness within. But then no matter what lens and the prism you look through of Osho, it's going to go deeper and it's going to get more poetic, right? Just, I've been listening to all your episodes about how Osho really started the human potential movement in psychology, and a lot of the depth practices that were in humanistic psychology are really integral to Osho's work, but he doesn't get nearly enough credit there. And I can tell you from experience as a seeker and as someone who's practiced Kundalini yoga and Sufic meditations for years, that it wasn't until I really understood the birth of the dynamic meditation, the active meditation, Osho's Kundalini, that I think he was right. There was something in Western culture, we're not ready to get there. We're not ready to receive. We got to get all the gunk out of our system and get the noise out of our head before we can become vehicles to hear the wavelength of the universe, right? And so in my business travels, I would stop by when I was in New York City, I would go to Padma and do the dynamic, or when I was in Atlanta, Georgia, I would go to the center there in Kennesaw and just try to do whatever I can. Later ended up hosting a mystery school here in Memphis and turning other people on to those meditations.
That's super amazing. And I really love the way you describe Osho in the poetic angle and dimension, because among many other things, of course, Osho is a great poet. Oh. You know, it just comes naturally flowing out of him. He's a great, brilliant mind, a great intellectual, a philosopher, if you like, a mystic, and also a beautiful, beautiful poet. Mm-hmm. So that's wonderful. And thanks for sharing with us how Osho entered your life. It clearly has taken your heart, has taken your whole being. It's overflowing from you. And that's wonderful to hear. And there are so many different aspects I'd love to dig deeper. But I think one that you mentioned about that book that is more valuable than a whole university course, yet Osho ideas are not so discussed. The majority of the times that we talk about Osho is regarding the kind of scandals, controversies, and, you know, all this kind of blah, 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 without entering into what Osho brought to the table in terms of helping human beings develop the consciousness, his methods, his ideas, his vision. And clearly that's what attracted you. And that's how your life seems to have really taken a new direction. So first, maybe let me ask you how your life changed after getting in contact with Osho. And then I'd love to hear in your experience in the business world, in the corporate world, if you come across discussions and mentions of Osho and his work.
Sure. So my life changed dramatically once I guess in myself took sannyas. And I don't know if that's proper, but I don't think Osho would care. I just surrendered to it all and said, no matter what the cost, I'm going to fully live, right? Zorba the Buddha, new man. And in that way, relationships that didn't work just kind of went on their own. I became healthier. I became a single father to my children. My business started taking off. My artistic career started taking off, publishing more poems, recording with 5 bands as a musician. But for my day job and to feed my children, I have an innovation, insights, and strategy company. And we help organizations transform and think about how they can be meaningful in the world 2 to 5 years from now. I call it, without telling them, corporate shamanism, because we go in and we mess with the energies of the place and we show them what the potential can be and we give them practices. And without knowing it, I'll actually work in some dynamic meditation, and I won't name it because it's scary, and they'll do this. And what I see again and again is that it humanizes the place. So I probably talk for a minute on this, if that's okay. I can give an example.
Yeah, absolutely.
So we were working. Yeah, okay. Thank you. Thank you. Just as an example, we were brought in to work with Merck Consumer Care and all of Merck Consumer Care's brands, Dr. Scholl's, Miralax, Claritin, and they were working on a new formulation for extreme eczema sufferers. And so what we do is that instead of looking at all the data, which can tell a lot of lies, there's so much bias in what's collected through surveys, we'll take the people who are creating the products and put them inside the lives of the real people who are using them. So I took a chemist who was about 64 and at the sunset of his career inside the homes of 3 eczema sufferers and just had them walk through their rituals of the day and heard things such as, this is a living hell. Nobody understands, even my husband and my children. I have to take a bath with Clorox bleach in the bath, on and on and on. Keep in mind, this chemist was very renowned. He had created the spectrum that we call the SPF spectrum for copper tone earlier in his career. But then after the third interview, it's about an hour and a half each of getting these human downloads, we went to the car and he started crying like a baby. I said, what's going on? And he said, I feel as if I've wasted my whole career. What do you mean? Well, before it was always about the science. It was about the formulation. But now I've got to go and help these real people. I've got to create some products that are going to give Susan some actual relief. So he was on a human-based mission. I had a very ecstatic moment, kind of hovered over myself and looked at both of us, feeling omniscient for a second, said, well, this is the birth of a new era. The way that we've thought about commerce, the way that it's taught in MBA schools is all based on this militaristic paradigm, this top-down industrial revolution linear process that is. It's given the way we talk about marketing, where we have business to business or business to consumer. The term marketing means to hit the mark. It comes from archery, right? Which is a very objectifying, not humanizing. It doesn't look at the object as a subject. It looks at it only as a buying unit. And so my insight there, which I believe is something that Osho would share, would be that these corpuses are just people. They just need to be reminded of their humanity. And this is the birth of what we'll call the human to human era. And the more that we can humanize people inside these dehumanizing things, be living cells in a dying body, to transform these large bodies with a lot of power, the more good can be done in the world. And so you see that there's this whole movement of something called conscious capitalism, and there are many of the precursors, such as Patagonia. And it's proven that if you look at the maternal and aspects of business and capitalism, and you treat people as humans, they call them firms of endearment. You get 17x the return of a for-profit company only when you're worried about not only your profit, but the people that work with you and who use your products and your suppliers and the planet and your ecological impact takes. So it's my mission to go in there. And I think of myself as Johnny Appleseed, who was a famous Swedenborgian, right? Every time he gave somebody an apple, he would say great news straight from heaven. So I'm going in there empowered by Bhagwan and just dropping quotes, saying things, working in some of the practices without telling them, making them seem like they are corporate management practices, which they actually are. Because what is corporate managing except people? But taking people back to that ecstatic root through some of these practices enables them to have the emotional empathy to think about their impact with other people with whom they're doing business.
I love what you're saying. And just recently, a couple of days ago, I listened to a podcast of Marianne Williamson. You may have heard of her. And she's bringing personal development and conscious capitalism into politics. I think it's great. And she was on a podcast of Mindvalley podcast. And that's an education company. And they're doing an amazing job trying to raise the consciousness. And then there are people like yourself who is very much into corporate, into business, and you take a chemist to have a humanizing experience that will change the way he's going to produce his products to commercialize. And I think this is unheard of, you know, like it's something that it's happening now in 2020-21. And it makes me really excited because I think there is no better time as today to do something that is conscious business, to be spiritually oriented and be in the world, contribute, do something that has a positive impact in the world. The only little upset I have is that I see many people referring to some spiritual tradition. There's some people, they might practice mindfulness and they might be connected or not with a Buddhist lineage. Other people talk openly about Yogananda. Other people, they don't have problem mentioning the roots, spiritual roots. But when it comes to Osho, Osho is omitted. But at the same time, we all know Osho's books are bestsellers everywhere in the world. These people, they all know, they all have read, they all have been inspired by Osho. Yet, they don't talk about Osho's ideas. And those ideas are really the building blocks, the guiding lights that we need to accelerate this transformation that is happening. So I'm wondering, in your experience, do you come across people talking about Osho? Have you heard, is there any conversation, or do you proactively, occasionally, when you feel the right opportunity, mention Osho? You know, what's your experience with that?
It's really interesting to see the more that we go inside large companies and large nonprofits is that there are layers of a journey that people take up for a lot of those who are more risk of a mask of culture and want to be successful in corporations. So it goes through layers where first there's mindfulness, then there's yoga practitioners, then there's people who are doing contemplative meditation, typically Christian based. Beyond that, we get to the Ramakrishnas and the Yoganandas of the world. And then people want to talk about shamanic techniques and processes as a layer under that, but only as the bottom layer of seekers who can't deny that their quest isn't met. They'll start to talk about Osho and mention Osho. And I really am of two minds about beloved Osho. I'm glad that in some ways that he is so polarizing. That means that the mirror that he's holding up to culture is valid. And he's making us question about ourselves in the deepest meditations and unlearn everything that's not useful. Some people haven't gone through that initiation process yet and may not be quite ready for it. But on the other hand, I do wish that people would quote Osho more often out in the open, and it wasn't so scandalous just because it's such strong and good medicine. I believe in time that the whole world will know Osho and his teachings, and no matter what lens and the prism you want to look through, he was already there. If you want to talk about overpopulation, he's got a good answer. If you want to talk about climate control, he has an answer. If you want to talk about organic farming and communal living, there's an answer there. Then it's a lived, earned answer. I think some people just aren't ready for that strong of a dose of truth, and that's okay.
I see. It's wonderful. I love your answer. And this image of Osho as this very bitter medicine that you don't want to take, but those bitter herbs are those who are really curing and effective.
Right. But if you invite Osho in, there is always some strange, lovely mysteries happening. So I'm going to just talk for a second of a friend and I, my friend Kiran Tana. He was Yogi Bhajan's personal bodyguard for many years and then left the Sikh movement and Kundalini Yoga in the mid-70s after just getting tired of that whole set of practice and its politics, frankly. But we started a mystery school, and I was reading from Osho and talking about it, and reading from the Wisdom of the Sands, his work on Sufi practices. And then I set everybody up into these couples in order to do some couples work. We started gazing, but there were about 60 people, and I was putting people together randomly. And I put together these two women who were roughly about 62 years old. I didn't know, and they at first were reluctant, but then I had them sit and gaze at each other. And I read some Osho, and then they both started crying. And when we were finished with the exercise, they were hugging each other and kept crying. I asked them to share. They were best friends from age 6 to age 18. And they got in a fight over a boy, and they haven't talked since. They'd seen each other in public, but not acknowledged one another. They held on to that hatred. But having them get together over Osho and look at each other in their eyes, all of their defenses melted, and they realized they still loved each other, and they were still childhood best friends at age 62. But that's the kind of things that happen when you bring Osho into activation.
Yes, there is a magical element which is very difficult to, discuss in modern terms, because we live in this, scientific age where everything needs to be explained, and that's hard to explain. But we all know, everyone involved in Osho's world with his meditation, just listening to his voice or reading his words, magic happens. And it's very powerful, very transformative. And, your experience, you just mentioned that, your own life, my life, and the one of thousands and thousands of others. So that's a beautiful reminder. Thank you for that.
Certainly.
So one question I always have in my mind, and I'd just like to put it out there, almost like sowing seeds, asking universe a bit of help. What do you think would be a new project to communicate Osho in a modern, fresh, elegant, and elevating way so that people can be more open to embrace his ideas and vision?
Well, I believe your podcast goes a long way, and just sharing the love and devotion and the service to humanity that comes out of acting in a way of devotion for Osho, expressing that love in everything we do, whether it's in the neighborhood, whether it's at the farmer's market, whether it's at our schools, whether it's in our business, but just personifying that will set the record straight. I think only active, ecstatic love will begin to redeem a lot of the bad press and some of the more melodramatic presentations of Osho and his scandal. And then lastly, I would say, the same thing that Osho did in On Basic Human Rights, which it makes no sense to criminalize Osho when the Reagan administration was actually at fault and Osho was merely threatening to a power structure. And no one likes what that power represented, American empire. And so getting back and seeing Osho as the prophet of true liberty and true freedom will allow us to speak about it more openly.
Wonderful. Yeah, that's a great insight. Thanks for sharing that. And I think, yeah, the most powerful way is through us, people who love Osho, who have been, whose life has been transformed, to just share it with others and live the example of what could be, to be inspired by Osho.
Indeed.
So, I mean, you are very much involved in business, but you're also a musician, a poet, a published writer, a shaman. So how do you keep all of these seemingly very different aspects together? Perhaps this question would be obsolete in a few years' time, where anyone working in a corporate or CEO of a big company is at the same time a shaman, and it's already happening, I see, but we're not there yet. So how do you keep it together?
I don't know how I keep it together. I just simply am, as Osho said. I just do. And I don't hide or repress or suppress anything. I'm very open about my identity. When anyone wants to talk about where I get inspiration and how we think about future-proofing an organization or transforming something for higher potential, you cannot not go into the realm of Osho or the realm of music or the realm of poetry. To the root word of poetry is poesis, meaning to make. And that's what we're doing. We're constantly remaking this universe through our own perceptions. And that is the nexus of true creativity, even commercial creativity. And so I believe that my existence is just to give permission to those who come in contact with me to go to those places that would scare them, to name them, to one, recognize their shadows, but then realize that growth is just on the other side, right? And the real magic here is delighting in existence and dancing through it, even in the dark days. And so to answer your question, having all those categories in my life, I think of myself as a hyphenated person. I'm a poet, I'm a musician, I'm a businessman, I'm a father, I'm this and that. But really, I'm just an ecstatic particle dancing around in this wild universe, right? And these are just emanations or expressions. And to me, knowing that everybody is capable of these multiple expressions makes me honor their depth and meet them where they are.
Beautiful. And that's so much Osho. You know, when you said this ecstatic particle, that really reminds me of Osho. You know, he was very much about celebration, being ecstatic, about sharing and being in love with life, with whatever you do. So that's wonderful. And I think what we need today is more people like you, more people who can be authentic and expressing talent in a spiritual way, in an artistic way, whilst being in the world. Because what I've seen in the past was a tendency of people who are more spiritually oriented and more sensitive, and they feel at odds with the business world. They tend to isolate and escape that world for good reasons. But nowadays I see it that in the world, in the business world, there are many more people who are open to this new approach. And I feel like there is a shift, and I invite everyone to not just live and go into some kind of country home or commune away from the real world, but to stay there and contribute. That's how I feel. I don't know why I'm saying this, but it's just coming out of me.
Oh, I think that's a lovely, lovely vision. And I believe that's what we're called to do, is to almost be monks without monasteries and to think of life as a retreat. You could even do a deep reading of the pandemic and the coronavirus, which has been a forced retreat for everybody. You know, everyone in their own way has had to enter their own period of silence. And it's very hard for some people, but the world is calling us to be these forces of light. Again, these new cells in a large body that is dying and only recreate itself from the inside. And business, in the large part, is getting to where you don't have to wear the mask of the dehumanizing mask of the 1950s, the industrial mask of the company man. They are allowing people to be more human. And interestingly, I find many less politics in the world of commerce than I find in academia or even in some professional artistic endeavors. And so I think it's fertile ground for us to harness the energy of business to help our species and the planet.
Yes, there is more politics sometimes, even in a spiritual community, more than in a startup where people are, you know, fresh with new ideas and they really want to get shit done and contribute positively. And, you know, politics is with us and wherever we go, and sometimes can be more exacerbated in academy, in the spiritual world, artistic world, rather than business. So it's beautiful. I love it.
Yes, indeed. So I thought maybe we would just end with a poem, if that works for you. This was also published on Osho News. I think that everything as a poet goes back to poetry, as long as we surrender to that infinite dance of the universe. So if that works for you, I think that would be a wonderful way to encapsulate this conversation.
Yes, I have three final questions. So you
to
recite the poetry either now or at the very end. It's up to you, your choice.
We'll wait to the end. Thank you.
Okay, so I'll shoot the three final questions. The first one is, what is Osho's greatest contribution to the world?
Osho's greatest contribution to the world was, there's so many, permission to be fearless, permission to be fully human.
Okay. The second question is, what is the most beautiful gift you received from Osho?
Osho helped me crack the code of living fully. So it really was an invitation to participate in an eternal dance and to be the awareness of that dance going on at all times. And so going from almost a doldrum existence, almost a suburban life, if you will, into putting a foot out and falling into the eternity at one moment has been just a great gift. So it again goes back to that awakening and awareness of everything's not as it seems. In fact, this great mystery is unfolding and it feels good.
Okay, beautiful. So the last question is, what is your preferred way to connect with Osho?
It would have to be through the dynamic meditation. And usually what I do, I'll do the dynamic and then I'll put on one of his talks. And I'm ready to really listen deeply after going through the dynamic.
I love it. It's wonderful. Let me give you a feedback because, you know, you mentioned at the beginning that you are not formally initiated into sannyas, but clearly you are so deeply taken and connected with Osho. And this final answer is a beautiful confirmation that you are putting together the techniques with Osho. Whereas sometimes I see even in the world of many people who have been with Osho for a long time, they dissociate what is the technique from Osho. And for me personally, this cannot be done. It doesn't work. I mean, you can do it, but it's not going to work. You're missing out a lot. So yeah, that's wonderful. Beautiful answer. So I guess it's time for your beautiful poetry. You're not just a great poet, but also you are a beautiful speaker, the way you recite it. So it's a wonderful way to end this interview.
This is called This Hum. This hum builds between us, the same way two rivers join salty water, as your lips, after we kiss too long, passion for you flies through streetlights. What fools try to organize the flow of people? They must not enjoy love's detours. That time you got lost driving down the street you grew up on, overtaken by a glance or a lingering remark. Only such willing, capable souls can swim here. Don't ask how or why. Science or philosophy might be able to talk about you, embody it. Can't trust their lover will catch the wave with a respective ear, then offer a naked syllable keyed into what is with the precision of a tuning fork that works in two worlds at once. Some believe only four directions exist: north, south, east, west. But there is another direction, another dimension inside. Here, intimate mercy erases all debt with a dance or a curl up on the floor cry in the hive where hums are born.
Wow, amazing. So with this invitation to go in and discover this new dimension, the inner dimension, which is what really counts, I will part ways with you. It's been an amazing experience connecting with you. I really love your poetry and your energy and what you're doing in the world. So, you know, keep going, and thanks for being part of the Lo Osho podcast.
Again, I'm honored, and thank you for your work in the world. I think you are one of the answers in how Osho can become more beloved and widespread throughout the world. So thank you.
I do my best. Lots of love.
I love you. Thank you. Bye-bye.
Bye.
Thank you for listening. If you enjoyed this episode, please share it and leave a review. Visit loveosho.com for more episodes, blogs, or to connect with us.